Welcome, everyone, to the second session here of Shaken Heavens, or Catastrophes of Biblical Proportions. For those of you who were not here for the Friday session, I'm going to give you a quick overview of what we covered so you're not completely in the dark here. We went through hairy mammoths and the ice hour, finding mammoths are found frozen with bison, horses, and rhinos in the Arctic Circle, saying that they're not an ice age creature, basically. Mammoth hair, like camel hair, it's not for insulating or suited for cold temperatures. Mammoth food, mammoths ate summer grasses, they didn't eat glaciers and pine needles. Mammoths were flash frozen, probably in 4 hours, 150 below zero, or colder faster, I guess, is a possibility with the stomach acid that they find. So, we studied or looked at Revelation, Exodus, and Emmanuel Velikovsky's connections on his catastrophes. The planet Wormwood in particular, and Revelation account, and how it relates to Exodus. We went through a lot of the different catastrophe features between the Velikovsky ancient cross-cultural witnesses. Basically, darkness, the planetary geographical pole shift, the tidal anomalies, sinking islands, fire rain from the sky, meteors and lightning. Talked about how the parallelism of the plagues, they're basically identical to all these ancient cultures. We kind of looked at Revelation from a synoptic account approach, showing that basically the Revelation account demonstrates the same characteristics in three sections. It seems to be kind of a repeat, like Joseph's dreams or the Synoptic Gospels, for that matter. And so it was just giving an introduction, saying there's a lot of other accounts in Scripture, and we're going to be going through some of those here in this session. So session two here, we're going to look at the work of Don Wesley Patton, who kind of was following a lot of Velikovsky's work. Velikovsky was basically covering a lot of Mars, so he says Mars is in the Tanakh, actually, several times in places. So we're going to look at how these Old Testament catastrophe accounts, again, couple into the New Testament prophecy. We'll look at timekeeping, you know, with Yahweh's planetary clock, looking at the backwards calendars, all the crooked calendars over the course of time, and talk a little bit about returning to a 360-day year. Looking at the eclipses, there's some scheduled here in the year 2014, 2015. I want to talk about those a little bit. And then looking at this, there's some, I guess, other parallel prophecies, I think, in the Psalms. So we'll start with D.W. Patton and catastrophe. So he did a couple works. He's still alive. He's still writing. Mars-Earth conflicts is where I'm getting most of the material that I'm kind of presenting here. Patton, he drew a lot from Velikovsky. He kind of did his own modeling with respect to the planets, saying the Newtonian forces or gravity, geomagnetic and gyroscopic forces. He's got some of the math all modeled on how the mechanics of these catastrophes would happen. He proposed that planetary conjunctions, like Mars with Saturn and with Jupiter and Saturn, would kind of upset Mars' ancient orbit, which right now to this day is in elliptical orbit, but he's basically saying it upset it a large degree more. Patton said that Mars visited Earth on a 108-year or 54-year periods, which again we'll compare to some of the accounts. E.W. Bullinger, what does 108 mean or 54? 2 by 54 or 1 plus 8 equals 9. 9 is judgment. 6 is judgment. 9 times 6, you kind of get the math if you like to study the numerology. Velikovsky assumed a 52-year cycle of these catastrophe periods, whereas Patton, again, is going with 54, and I think he's got some really interesting reasons and explanations why. So he basically his numbers I think compare real well with the data. Some of this font's a little small, so you have to pardon me here. This is kind of a listing of the Bible catastrophes. Time over here is kind of a nominal date, and the time gaps that he's figuring in this column here. The position of Jupiter and Saturn in the sky on the right hand side. So just running through the flood of Noah, there's mention of crust eruption, the flood, the wind, the Tower of Babel. You've got dispersion of peoples and an earthquake as a possibility there, probability. Sodom and Gomorrah, fire, brimstone. Lot and his family go to the cave for a mountain retreat, I guess. Exodus plagues. We got fire, brimstone, dust, manna, earthquake, the earth splits, water displacement, wind, animal migrations, darkness. You guys were kind of through a lot of that in session one. Here we get into Joshua's long day where the sun stalled in the sky and accounts of brimstone. Deborah and Barak, or Barak, basically, earthquake is mentioned in that account. The stars fought against Sisera, it says. There was an abnormal flooding event with the river, and there's thundering as well. Gideon, the soldiers are kind of mimicking the brimstone and fire with torches and clay pots when they're running down the hill, and we'll touch on that a little bit more. David had the angel of the Lord, over Jerusalem at the time of the sacrifice. Elijah and Mount Carmel, again, we got fire from heaven coming down. There's another case of Elijah with the mountain retreat. With Joel and Amos, make mention of the sun setting at noon, Sennacherib and Hezekiah. Talks about pestilence, talks about the sun going backwards on the sundial several steps. And Hezekiah's length is also extended at that period of time. And again, Patton, he makes arguments for Jupiter and Saturn being in certain spots in the sky. And so you could argue, for or against some of these dates, but if there is that kind of periodicity that you'd expect, I think to me he's may well be onto something here. So this is kind of his rendition of how Mars' ancient orbit related to Earth's ancient orbit. You can see he's got intersect points here between October and March. So I guess going back to previous slide. Oops. Yeah. Things possessed here. Okay. You can see he's got them all kind of pegged down to either October or March time frames. So both of these, again, fall and spring is kind of when these points of intersect are, which I think kind of correspond with feast, if you think of it that respect. Patton makes the arguments for Mars being in the Tanakh in like more places than you expect, and we're familiar with the term Mars, but he's saying that Baal or Bel, destroying fire, pillar of fire, and Leviathan, all these terms basically are relating to the planet Mars. Apollo, Abao, the similarity of sounds there. So some of the evidences, and this is actually something picked out of Velikovsky's work, there's Chinese records that were featured in some English satire describing the two moons of Mars, describes their orbit and their proportions. This is before the telescope was invented. So either those people had some sort of, divine knowledge of it, or as an alternative, they had eyewitness accounts. Oops. The polar axis match between Mars and Earth, they're also very similar, close to 23 degrees. So if these two bodies are going to come in close proximity and have effects on one another, now you've got the explanation for the tilt of the axis for the spin of the planetary body. There's scars on Mars, kind of suggesting interplanetary lightning, but that's speculative, and I guess kind of later. Mountain formation, again, They believe that the planet being closer was able to do uplifts of the crust on both bodies. Patton also believed that Astra was involved, or that there was another planet in the solar system that made a collection of fragments. One thing that kind of in support of that is, I got the canals up there. Let me come back to that in a second here. The orbits of all these comets seem to circle Earth. This is some of the Walt Brown material, but he's done, made arguments for these. Of all things in the solar system, they seem to be coming around Earth, which is an interesting correlation or phenomenon. Basically, he thinks that the planet Astra came close, broke into bits and pieces from the gravity of the larger body. There is a huge dent on one side of Mars and a big kind of uplift, a bump on it. A dent on one side, bump on the other, on opposite sides. Again, kind of implying a planetary collision of some sort. This gets into a little bit kind of out there stuff and a little bit of a tangent, but basically people say there's fossil fuels in the ground and they come from dinosaurs. Well, they've discovered that you can dig 3-4 miles down to get oil sometimes, so how do the dinosaurs get to those kind of depths is the question. So if another planet had fractured and if it also had petroleum in it, that would explain the rain of hot naphtha and everything that the Hebrew Targum and everything had mentioned that we were referring to in this session one. So again, it's abiotic. They drill down and do samples of it, and there is not biological life if you keep the sample pure. So if bacteria is capable of feeding on raw petroleum, which is what has led our modern day science to believe is the reason for fossil fuel, they don't think of the fossil fuel or the oil as potential food for bacteria. They're thinking of it as it comes from the bacteria, and bacteria is evidence of it, decomposing and rotting. But if in fact bacteria can feed on the petroleum, which it can, now we got another possible explanation on the whole manna front. So again, these are the collection of catastrophes that we want to look at a little bit more detail. So you can see all the eschatology, also very very similar theme, thematically related between these accounts of text and Revelation and with this destruction. So Noah's tribulation, I guess, is some of the telling the end from the beginning. We have Matthew 24, the days of Noah are like the Son of Man's coming. We have the concept of foreknowledge with Noah. New Testament, I think, in 1 Thessalonians 5, is very much alluding to, foreknowledge of disaster warning for believers. We get the case of the wicked look for miracles, but can't interpret the sign of Jonah. I guess, incidentally, there was a gray whale sighted in Tel Aviv or Joppa Harbor in April of this last year, which they're not native to the Mediterranean or the Atlantic, so we have had a gray whale pop up over there. So, again, failing to determine the signs of the skies, that's one example there.
No
other sign will be given to this wicked adulterous generation with the exception of the prophet Jonah. So here we've got that kind of in a modern times fulfillment. So we've got the case of Noah living 600 years before the flood, which is a disaster thing. So man to live 120 cycles or 50 jubilees in 6,000 years. You've got 2 Peter talking about mankind living for 6,000 years. The firmament erupting to cause all the floods in Genesis, according to Revelation, you've got the earth open to swallow water. So again, you've got kind of one side and the other side type and anti-type or whatever sort. You've got Genesis 6, the Ben Elohim took human wives. Here you've got reference in Noah's day, in the days of Noah, Matthew 24, they were giving marrying and giving in marriage. And you got the Daniel reference, iron and clay mixing together. You know, iron being, I think, angelic, and clay being, that of man, that of Adam. According to J.R. Church, he says that the flood occurred when Jupiter and Saturn were in the constellation of Aquarius, which is the water bearer, which I think is pretty interesting. So if you look at Revelation with respect to it being astral prophecy, some of these things relating to things that we're not very familiar with, as far as figuring out which star is the planet Mars or Venus, I don't think most of us could do that. And I guess I'd probably be guilty of that too here. So, but we're not familiar with it, with the zodiac and its original prophetic intent and value. So that's actually kind of one of the simpler cases. Same with the Tower of Babel. We got one world language. You know, now everyone's talking HTML and binary on the internet. So, you know, I think you can make arguments for we're there. One world government, I think there's pointers to that ramping up. Here we got one great tower falling. Oh, we just had two towers fall not too long ago, right? So the case of Luke is, Siloam, the tower falls, again, as a warning to people. So I think it's been serving as that. The city started by Cain and Nimrod, I think, is another allusion to Mystery Babylon. So in one case you've got Cain, the wicked one, starting up, building a city. In the other case, that city's coming down. Earthquake possibly prompting the tower collapse. And Revelation, you got mention of the greatest earthquake. So here you got Tower of Babel, where the wicked were scattered, and here in Revelation you got the righteous gathered. It gets more interesting with accounts of Lot, Abraham, Sodom, Gomorrah, Genesis 19 stuff, some of it Genesis 14 mixed in here, and Revelation, I guess, kind of all over the place. Lot and his family were pulled out in the nick of time. Genesis 19, Revelation 18, woman was called out of Babylon, pre-plague, come out of her, my people, right? Burning sulfur falls from heaven in Genesis 19 in the case of Sodom and Gomorrah. You've got hail and fire falling, 100-pound stones in the case of Revelation, and again, the stars fall is out of the Matthew Mark eschatology and Revelation as well. Flee to the mountains, don't look back. You remember that? That sounds familiar. What Yeshua would say on the, in his Olivet discourse, when a time comes, don't be looking back. We have vegetation in the land was burned in Genesis 19. Green grass burned up, Revelation 8:7. Dense smoke rising from the land in Genesis, Revelation, Babylon left smoldering. Lot, there's mention of the unleavened bread that he's serving the visitors. So likely, again, in support of patents, seasonal timelines, you've got a Passover event here is likely what this is. You've got five kings falling to in the time of Abraham, Genesis 14. The five kings theme again being the Armageddon battle, Revelation 16. The Nephilim or Anakites are present in the Genesis 14 battle. There's mention to the sexual attraction to male angels in Genesis 19 as well. Strange flesh attraction, Jude 1. Daniel 2, again, the divided kingdom, the iron mixed with clay. He will rule over them with an iron scepter coming out of Revelation. Abraham rescuing Lot in the 14th year. Abraham tied to Melchizedek, another thing that's sounding awful lot like a Sukkot type of event. We've got the wilderness dwelling, tabernacles, the Revelation story there. So kind of rhetorical question is Lot a picture of the northern tribes? Abraham and Judah is I think kind of with Lot coming to pull Abraham out of there. Joshua and Joshua's long day gets even more interesting here. Joshua's day was lengthened in times of Matthew. He says those days will be cut short, if not that no flesh will be left alive. You've got large hailstones fall in the book of Joshua, 100-pound hailstones in Revelation. Sun stood still, moon stopped, sun stopped middle of the sky, Joshua. Again, in Amos, it talks about, I will make the sun go down at noon. And I don't think that's recorded in any account, I guess, post Hezekiah. So as far as that happening or being unfulfilled, I take that as a future event. Great darkness falling upon the earth. It's a revelation event. Heavenly bodies again shaken. So that's definitely an upset, you know, description of that. Joshua builds an altar at Mitzpet Jericho. And as of last summer, on the 9th of Av, they set up an altar, Mitzpet Jericho. I don't know how many of you know that, but whether or not that is re-fulfillment, you could make arguments. Joshua reads Torah on the mountain, Joshua 8. Yeshua teaches Torah, probably somewhat Psalm 119 on the mountain. The pagan kings hide in caves, again hiding in caves, Revelation 6. Five kings in particular buried in caves, Joshua 10, five pagan kings fall, Revelation 17. Joshua leads return from the promised land, Yeshua gathers four corners from of the elect from the four corners. Reference in Joshua again, the Anakites, etc. Only in Gaza, Gath, and Ashdod did any survive. Those are, interestingly enough, the places where are in dispute and trouble today. Gaza should be forsaken. Ashdod and Gath, Philistine or Palestinian territory is what that is. Israel is avenged on its enemies in Joshua 10, and of course, Revelation 19, Israel is revenged. Joshua records the greatest Sukkot celebration, and Yeshua has the greatest one coming up in Revelation 19 here. We've got a case in Joshua 3 where Joshua crosses the Jordan, case of Revelation. The earth helped it open its mouth, or helped out open its mouth, swallow the river. This is kind of interesting. I saw the other day, 12:6 and 16:12. You've got the river drying up to prepare the wings for the kings of the east. So we've got the Matthew, you know, wise men or kings come the Messiah following a star, right? I've always taken that preparing the kings, the way for the kings of the east as being, you know, an evil army, but I think that the possibility of that being another Exodus path, I see that possibility anyway, so. The river crossing, in the time of the harvest, it was mentioned as this fall harvest, according to Joshua 3. Yeshua returns and leads captives at harvest time, again, Revelation 14. Seven cycles of trumpets at Jericho, and of course in Revelation we've got seven trumpet judgment, right? So the case of Deborah and Barak is not as long. You're thinking, thank you. we've got the earth shook, according to Judges 5, the mountains quake before the Lord. Again, greatest earthquake in Revelation, several spots. The kings came, they fought. Kings of Canaan fought by waters of Megiddo. Judges 5, where we have Revelation 16 and 17, kings fall, the Armageddon battle. We've got the stars fought from their courses against Sisera. Again, hail and fire falls, and stars fall from heaven. Those, again, recurring themes. The river Kishon swept them away. And I guess we've got, in the day before the flood, I guess this is a New Testament account of the old, of course, but talking about the flood that took them all away. Earth opens to swallow water. Again, it's just similar water and unexpected upset. Gideon, I think, is the case of Gideon is, I think, the most interesting of the catastrophe parallels. So you've got Gideon's in the middle of a dream. At a dream, a round loaf of barley bread came tumbling into the Midianite camp. It struck the tent with such force, the tent overturned and collapsed. Judges 7. We've got John, of course, he had a vision in the spirit. Is how he came upon his revelation. He saw wormwood as part of his revelation. Revelation 18, talking about Babylon being thrown down with angel, with violence like an angel with a large millstone. The sword of Gideon, that was, I guess, when they were storming the camp. We've got the sword parallel in Revelation 19 and Revelation, I guess, 19 again. The sword, the sharp sword that strikes the nations. Judges 7, he placed trumpets in empty jars with torches inside, blew their trumpets. and broke the jars that were in their hands. Velikovsky also mentions that the shofar sound was very much like the passing planet, which is, I think, kind of an interesting anomaly there. So whether or not the planets, you know, scream and sound like that, I think is possible or probable. We got no one lights a lamp and hides it under a jar. Well, these guys did, right? And they're in storming. So that's kind of, I think, comedy. But as far as, you know, not throwing your pearls before a swine, I think that's kind of another picture there. No one to spook them. So nations ruled with an iron scepter dash the pieces like pottery. You know, it's kind of another allusion maybe to Judges 7 or blast of the trumpet. Same thing. So they went running down the hill, making all sorts of ruckus, breaking all sorts of things, and they see sparks flying all over. You know, they could have been playing on that event, which was in the neighborhood or on schedule to arrive if the ancient cultures did get used to this, which I believe they did. So we've got a case of civil war. This is the picture in Judges 7, men turning on each other with the swords, and in Revelation 6, the same thing, they're turning on each other. More of Gideon, we've got Israel did evil. In 7 years they were being oppressed by the Midianites, Judges 6. I think 7 year tribulation is pretty well accepted anyway in this camp, I'm guessing. Gideon was threshing wheat in a wine press to keep it from the Midianites. You know, wheat being kind of like us. We got Yeshua saying to Peter, Satan has asked to sift you as wheat. We got the wine press, says the fury of wrath of God in Revelation 19. We've got the wine press where the Midianite leaders were killed. And Revelation 14, gathering grapes, and the wine press of God's wrath. I think this or statement is kind of neat in Numbers 18. Your offering will be reckoned to you as grain from the threshing floor or juice from the wine press. So it's going to be, I guess if your statement is properly interpreted, I think that's kind of interesting with given all that above. So you've got Gideon case in Judges 6 talking of the unleavened bread. Again, unleavened bread, probably a Passover thing. Fire fell down and flaring from the rock consumed the meat and the bread. You know, quite possibly a lightning event with that. We've got Luke, John the Baptist, talking about his winnowing fork in his hand, clear his threshing floor, gathering wheat, burn up the chaff, then unquenchable fire. Another parallel there. Gideon built an altar. That's something else, kind of another, you know, last days type thing, where whether or not they used that altar they built the ninth of Av, I have no idea. But obviously an altar, unless you have it there, you can't upset the sacrifice. Gideon counts his army and reduces it. You got Revelation, the counting of all the armies there. Midianites are described as being thick as locusts. Locusts came down on the earth in Revelation 9. Okay. In case of David, similar parallels again. He lives in Hebron 7 years before coming into Jerusalem. So 7 years of tribulation prior to restoration of 7 years of tribulation will be before the restoration of Jerusalem, Daniel 9. We have David multiplying in numbers. We've got in 1 Chronicles 12, Zion being born in a day. Isaiah 66 is alluding to that, as is believers congregating, I think, in the wilderness, Revelation 12:6. David's options, he was given the option after he did his census, do you want to deal with famine or pursued by your enemies or plagued, which is exactly what the curses of Deuteronomy were. You got the pale horse bringing famine, sword, and plague. David battles five kings. Goliath was one of the giants, and there were four other Rephaim that were his brothers. Five kings fall in the Battle of Armageddon again. Saul spares David, King Saul in the cave. Again, kings hiding in the caves, Revelation 6. Jebus was a threshing floor to clear to prepare a way for an altar. And Matthew 3, he will clear his threshing floor, you know, gathering his wheat into the barn. Again, before and after census of the fighting men, Revelation and First Chronicles and Samuel. David sees the angel of the Lord over Jerusalem. John sees angels executing judgment as well. The tabernacle of Moses was on a high place. David was actually afraid to go there, which is kind of interesting. It talks in Amos how David's fallen tent is to be restored. And interestingly enough, that's 9-11, or 9 verse 11. I think that's accidental either. But David sings a song talking about victory, lightning, earthquake, cherub, darkness, cloud, and the sea splitting. So this is in David's time. The Song of Redemption, Revelation 14, and the Song of Moses, I think, are extremely similar to that. And I know this is going to shock you all, but we got more of the same with Elijah, right? Prophets are hidden in caves. In 1 Kings 18, Elijah retreats to a cave. 1 Kings 19, Revelation saying everyone is hiding in the caves. Revelation 6. Elijah is exposed on the mountaintop to wind, earthquake, and the mountain splitting. In the case of Revelation, you know, there's the greatest earthquake. The city splits, cities collapse, and mountains disappear. Elijah repairs the altar in 1 Kings. Again, the altar must be before the abomination of desolation. After the earthquake came a fire, is 1 Kings 19. Elijah calls down on fire from on the men of Ahaziah, 2 Kings 1. And I guess as far as, you know, wetting the altar, whether or not he was actually making more electrically conductive is, I think you could make some arguments for that. But again, fire falls, Revelation 8, 13, 16, 20. Elijah divided the Jordan River with his cloak, throwing his cloak on it. And again, Revelation, we know, earth opens up this wall of water. Some more stuff on Elijah here. He's fed by ravens, which are unclean birds. You've got the Revelation account, Revelation 12, sends, the sun is scorching hot, and dragon, the dragon, which is, you can think of as an unclean bird, sending rain to the woman in Revelation 12 and 16. We got the 1260 days of drought, 1 Kings 17. We've got Elijah in the wilderness, a woman cared for during the drought, 1260 days or 3.5 years, 1 Kings 17, James 5 and 17. So there's kind of another pointer to that 360 day year thing. The woman kept in the wilderness for 1260 days, Revelation 12:6. Elijah prays for drought and then rain, James 5. Two witnesses have the power to stop rain, Revelation 11. Widow's son, first resurrection. That's the first resurrection I'm aware of, I guess, in Scripture. Millennial kickoff, you've got, what, the first resurrection coming up. 2 Kings 2, Elijah went up to heaven in a whirlwind. Witnesses taken up in a cloud, Revelation 11. 1 Kings 6, Ahab more evil than any king before him. Revelation, we've got Apollyon. There's the Baal comes from the abyss. Revelation, again, 9-11. I think that's interesting there. Jezebel kills all the prophets, and Jezebel's back in Revelation 2. Prophets of Baal killed in the Kishon Valley, 1 Kings 18. Wicked kings fall in the Megiddo Valley, Revelation 16. Hezekiah's life was lengthened in, jumping into Hezekiah account right away. Hezekiah's life was lengthened. Again, we got the days cut short in Matthew. The 1260 days and 360 day year return according to Revelation 12. Sun reverses on the sundial. So again, we got Amos in that day, the sun will go down at noon. We got Deuteronomy, at midday you will grope about like a blind man in the dark. You know, is that prophecy for ancient Israel, or is that prophecy for Revelation? I'd say both. Sennacherib was supposedly struck by lightning pestilence. He was reported as badly burned, according to, I think Josephus had said that. Thunder and lightning, mentioned Revelation 4, 8, 11. Great Passover celebration at the time of Hezekiah. And I guess here we're anticipating the Passover upset, but a huge Sukkot celebration unlike any before. Jerusalem being besieged. 2 Kings 18, we've got the same thing happening in the time of tribulation. Sennacherib attacks on the 14th year of Hezekiah's reign. I think Revelation, probably a divine rescue in the 14th year. That parallels the Joseph account, 7 years of plenty, 7 years of lean, at the end of the 14th year of conclusion. Abram, he battles to save Lot in the 14th year. In the 13th year, there's rebellion, and then he continues on at Sukkot. So again, more of the same, more of the same. We've been through Exodus in session one a lot, but we've got the earthquake parallels. We've got the earth opening to swallow Korah, or earth opening again, Revelation. Thunder and lightning in Exodus 9. Thunder and lightning, Revelation. Again, the woman protected in the wilderness in both cases. The plagues, the pattern is trouble first, Exodus second, and then final trials, during the migration follow. Again, Joseph, the seven lean, seven plenty. I guess bringing that out, it's not an Exodus account, but the land surrendered at the end for food. Revelation talking about a quarter of wheat for a day's wages. So whether or not that fits into that 2001 to 2008 time frame with the market crash, I tend to think there's possible hints there with the 777 market crash on Yom Teruah. We've got Jubilee migration to the Promised Land, Jubilee and return to the Promised Land. Exodus 23, see, I'm sending an angel ahead of you to guard you along the way. And what we have, Malachi and Matthew, basically referring to John, but I think also just not just John, but they have the star coming, right? Matthew 2 makes reference to the wise men and the star. So there again, you've got the dual fulfillment of the prophecy, I think. So angels come and pronounce feast. That's another pattern of another, I guess, evidence in Revelation. Moses gathers people in Exodus. Yeshua gathers people in the New Testament, or in the future, homecoming, I guess. That I got redundant from the other slide. Looks like the Civil War account in the time of Aaron and the Levites. Take a sword to your brother, and the Revelation again, go slay each other. The trumpets of Sinai, the trumpets before Babylon falls, and again others we've kind of hit in session one. This is one other case. It's such a concise snapshot. I just had to pop this thing up as one thing. This is Habakkuk, and you can see the earth shook, mountains crumbled, age-old hills collapsed, wrath against the streams, rage against the sea. You split the earth with rivers. The mountains saw you. Deep roared and lifted its waves on high. Sun and moon stood still in the heavens. Lightning, your flashing spear, in your anger you threshed the nations. You came out to deliver your people, you crushed the leader in the land of wickedness. So right there, you've got the 10 verses, which kind of Revelation in miniature, I think. So I guess a few things to remember in concluding this part. History is prophecy, that which was will be. There's nothing new under the sun. Remember, don't look back when time comes to run to the hills, I guess, right? Lot's wife and Yeshua. Kings are buried in caves. Saints are safe in tents, I think. That's Velikovsky attributes the angel of death to the Passover angel, which if that caused an earthquake, that would have, if you're dwelling in little shacks down in Goshen, kind of in the ghetto, who's going to die? The people under the nice quarters, or people with not a lot to fall on top of them? The wind blows your tent over, you're still alive, right? So he said that he's inclined to attribute some of that salvation from that. So angel of death visitations, they seem to be Passover or fall festival season, so Day of Atonement or Yom Teruah events. Whether or not you can whether or not you can couple Halloween to those types of events is a reason for the season, if you will, a reason to for them to be observing it. You know, if the spooks are out, you know, you got lightning zapping people. You don't know what and why. Everything is dark. You don't know. I think that's within the realm of possibility there. So, I guess look up as your redemption draws near, right? So after the angel passes by, you can walk out with your head held high. And there's probably a couple of reasons. You know, one is pride of our God, and the other, you're wondering what's up, right? So wise men see the star and east and follow it. Don't follow the Baal of the Peor. So I don't know how that's different from the star that they saw, but when to follow it and when to not is I think kind of a that's a Midrash topic that I don't want to think of touching here. So I don't know where I'm on time right now.
4:30.
Okay, I get to keep going. Or no, I don't. I got a few more minutes anyway. Maybe I'll break here because if I got 5 legitimate minutes left and then I'm 10 minutes of Q&A, I shouldn't hold you. But this section here is about 20 slides. It gets in the eclipse, and I'll get scolded if I go over on my time and without giving you all a break. So I guess I'll take questions on that portion right now, and then move on to this other section for anyone who's going to hang around. Yes, sir.
Yes, Mr. Hoy, you covered a tremendous amount of information in a very short period.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
There's a couple of things. Actually, some of the things you talk about, there's people in here I've known for years, and I do not talk about this stuff with them because it will really freak them out.
Uh-huh.
When you look at this, you're dealing, some of this deals with mystery of religion dialogue. If you look through the history of time, Greeks, Romans, Egyptians, all of them worshiped Mars, Venus, and worshiped these planets, and there were reasons because the demons are involved in those planets.
Absolutely.
And when you start talking about aliens, demons, planets, people start going, I'm out of here, you're nuts.
Yep.
This is like Mark Roth, I'm out of here. But the thing is, there is truth there, and NASA has found things about Mars. And just, you go to their website, check out one of the moons, we never see the back side of the moon. The back side is a huge, 20,000 to 30,000 feet tall wall that goes all the way across the back side. You know, there's just other phenomena that you have to begin to wonder about. And the ancient peoples worship these gods, and the gods said, don't worship these people. At the end time, Yeshua said, it's going to be like in the days of Noah. And the days of Noah were very terrifying times for the people. Noah moved where he built the ark because he was terrified from the fallen angels over there, and the Nephilim.
Yes.
And they will return, and they will come like peace. And there's world religions right now saying, these guys aren't bad, they're here to help us. They've already made that statement publicly.
Yes, with this presentation, there is there's threefold. You know, what in this earth or in this universe is God not sovereign over? The answer is nothing. You know, He's the first cause of all things. But if you look at Genesis 1, creating the heavens and the earth, now you take a look at in the Hebrew of what's heavens, or you know, it can imply heavenly bodies, and heavenly bodies can certainly apply. The fallen, angels fallen or otherwise, you know. So when you're seeing this, you know, you really have to take your either or hat off and put on your parallel truth hat, and there is a reason that they've worshipped the planets, and there's maybe the evil guys go hitchhiking on these things, but I don't know how it is exactly, so. But yes, parallel truth, certainly. Yes?
Yes, I know that all throughout history, mankind has tried to pervert what our Creator has put into the heavens. They've worshipped Saturn and so forth. But Yahweh has put the planets and the stars and things there as, what, signs and seasons? And I know that there's a NASA government website where you can go and you can check out to see when all of the solar lunar eclipses have been throughout history, and you can even project forward, according to NASA, when these eclipses, prenumbral, solar, lunar, and total, partial, and that sort of thing. And if you go back in history so far, you see where they landed on our traditional Gregorian or Julian calendar, it doesn't seem to make sense. But then when you take the Hebrew calendar, it's amazing how many of them have fallen on Passover, Feast of Tabernacles, Yom Kippur. And then when you go forward in history, and remember in Matthew 24, where it says, and the sun shall be darkened, and the moon shall not give her light, and so forth. And then you go forward, and you look, and there's like two or three, like, total eclipses
yep.
that occur.
That's in this section here. This is this following section. So, yeah, There's a couple things. You know, you can only go back so far with the computer programs because of limitations of the heavens have been shaken. They will be shaken. They have been shaken. So you want to run your starry nights and whatever, you know, do it till the cows come home. I don't care, because you've got the pages of the text, and you know, Hezekiah is the last event that describes that, and I don't think that you can go back farther with any reasonable accuracy, and
that's
yeah. So another question, anyone? Anyone? Yes.
Well, seeing in Greek mythology, the red planet, you talk about the war connection, how it gas, you know, the sign, and you're like, how did they get Mariner's super valley that they had? Was that how many high school men drank? Of course, there's no way you could see that unless it was up close.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, all the features. I mean, Patton does a really good job kind of evaluating those features. Another kind of proof for like an astro explosion, you know, local planet catastrophe, is the moon is peppered on one side with craters and asteroids. Same thing with Mars, and you can tell by a crater density and the rotation of the spin what period of time this crater shower occurred, really. And same thing with the flood. You know, if the fountains of the earth burst forth and you had a Mars event that was in close proximity, you know, now you could be having, with the fountains of the deep, all the pressure on the plates, getting water rising up, you know, in that, possibly flooding Mars on a temporary basis. It supposedly doesn't have enough gravity to maintain an atmosphere, so all that, anything that did land on it, so whether or not it got spanked and splashed during the time of the flood is again more speculation, I guess. But, yes?
As good as this man is, very compelling. A lot of people, you know, NASA and scholars and scientists, they all want to use for anything. They all want to use their hidden figure pattern that they have in this, the course, the matter of the constellations, their track. What Andy's saying is that these have been altered in the past. They haven't maintained their same course.
Right.
Track. So
right.
You know, before, you know, right around 700 BC or so, if you try to go back further than that, it could get difficult because according to Velikovsky, what Andy's showing is that according to Velikovsky, they haven't always been the same. That many things have changed in the heavens. So,
right.
You understand?
Yes, they do. Yes, they do. And they follow different pharaoh cycles across the ecliptic.
Yes, sir.
I saw there at the beginning when you were showing the orbits of the comets around the Earth.
Yes.
Do you think that's a possibility of how we got so much H2O?
No, I think part of that's a matter of perspective. I think the fountains of the deep burst forth is what the Genesis account says. So you had some sort of eruption, and then the fountains of the heavens opened up and started raining. What's interesting in the account, and Walt Brown gets into this on the in the beginning book. He doesn't bring in the planetary thing, but he says that there was a big rift, and he says it's around the Atlantic mountain range, basically. In the Atlantic Ocean, there is a mountain range that goes through the middle of it, you know. And he basically says that that's what tore up and opened on the other side. It, it's a negative, so positive on one side, negative on another. With all this, if the water was subterranean, and he's got a good basis for saying anything, the firmament is sheet-like, and it was the between the ocean above and the oceans below. So if you had waters beneath, so the waters kept rising after, this is very important, after the rain stopped, the waters kept coming up. So if the waters were not coming from below, how do you explain that? Another portion, the earth was made formless and void. So if it's made smooth like a cue ball, you know, now we've got something more like a basketball that's been rolled through the mud, right? So was Everest always at 35,000 or what have you? You know, I think not. So you talk about the quantity of water. Velikovsky actually thinks that the petroleum we have came from this event. I wouldn't go that far, but yes, sir.
I read in Fed Paper magazine about a year or so ago, he printed an article by some Russian scientist, Jewish scientist from Russia in the 1800s, who his theory was similar to that the Russian guy that he talked about. I don't remember his name now. But his theory was that Mars and Venus were both in very erratic orbits, and that when Venus would pass close to the Earth, because its atmosphere is like 98% carbon dioxide, that the Earth's atmosphere would grab some of the Venus's atmosphere, and it would literally rain oil on Earth. And that's where the abiotic oil comes from.
I see. I see. I haven't heard that, but as far as, you know, what is... when was a rock born, right? I mean, it's really, you're getting back into the creation of matter at some point. You know, what matter was created at what state and when? And you have to say it was created because everything is in the case of winding down. So everything hot is cold, everything high becomes low, and everything is always on quest for equilibrium. There's no energy or matter that violates that law in the universe. So you need to make a time zero and progression downward from there. So I think that there has been atmosphere exchanges, and in the first session I kind of touched on a little of that. But yes, sir?
When you talk about the heavens being shaken and different planetary objects maybe coming close to Earth and the pole shifting and everything, so if we think about Planet X and its very elliptical orbit, do you think maybe Planet X could have came close by the Earth and maybe it'll come close by the Earth again in Revelation?
Between Planet X and Wormwood, you know, I think you get into again the terms, the multiple uses of terms. My understanding is just Chernobyl was also, you know, Wormwood in Russian or some such thing. You know, Wormwood is a bitter, it's a root that's, I think, hallucinogenic, and it's used in ceremonies of Wiccan. So when he's talking about having the cup of having Mystery Babylon drink of the cup. You know, it's the pharmacy, you know, it's vengeance, you know, in that way, you know, to the point of you're going to be, you know, hallucinating on this now, you know. I think that's with Messiah, too. You have they force-fed him or got him to drink the vinegar and gall. Now, that gall, I think, is that wormwood, that bitter. And he said, no, I'm not drugging up for this thing. I'm going the whole ride. So, yes, sir.
Add to yours there is that God said he's going to send strong delusions upon the world, except for the elect. The elect, they think he will be deceived, but he sells strong delusions to that Jerusalem.
Sure. So it's a parallel Wormwood thing. That,
Plus when Eric's comment about that, I think back in 1983 or 1986, NASA came out with a report, a newspaper article, where they suspected that unidentified planetary object, planetoid out past
Pluto.
Yeah, past Pluto. And it was having effects on the orbit of Neptune's Pluto. And they couldn't figure out, astronomers couldn't figure out what was affecting with some external gravity force. So they came out this 1983 or 1886 before the star.
Yeah, I'm sorry, I didn't really answer the question. Part of it was just because the term, and you remember seeing the Mars terms that we have here, right? I think that things have been in such confusion. If you have planets in close conjunction, it's like two cars that are coming close, and I don't know, maybe NASCAR or something. One comes up, and it's like, Is it the one that's in front or behind? So I think they may have lost track of them if they were in close alignment. I mean, Velikovsky said the ancient culture said that Jupiter gave birth to Venus. So if that's the case, is it that it came out, or is that when the planet was bright enough to see? You know, if you got a small planet way out there and it's suddenly kind of been, you know, changed by trajectory, you know, now it looks like, you know, because they're used to watching Jupiter for many, many years. All the ancient cultures had like five principal planets or something like that. So the question is Wormwood. I don't buy the Planet X thing. I've heard the NASA thing, and I don't think that it takes a planet on a 3,600 year orbit. Another thing that doesn't do, it does not explain the cases of these repeat, you know, higher frequency occurrences. I mean, I think, you know, seeing all those other accounts where eschatology is, I think, a pretty obvious theme in them. You know, hail coming down this month again. Oh yeah. I mean, according to Patton, you could set your watch by it, you know, on the periods and stuff. So I don't think that Wormwood itself has whether it's another dark planet and you know, way out there, I guess, is so. Yes, sir. WikiSky and stuff. There's a blackout of some area in the sky. You can make arguments for it being a military satellite, or you know, a special military toy or tool or whatever. People are trying to. They're saying, well, it's coming from the south in the South Pole. I mean, I've tried to go down as many of those roads as I can out of curiosity to see what they have to say. I wouldn't be surprised if it's something that came in from out of town, but I wouldn't insist that it is either. I'm inclined to say that you know, we'll be seeing Mars come back or something like that, and I think there's other ways, other forces in the universe that are capable of influencing planetary bodies other than gravity.
Or Planet X. Here's the possibility for that most star systems in the universe we know of are at least boundaries, some kind area and so on.
Yes.
So where's our planet?
It could be, yeah. As far as the you know, and I get into this even a little later, the you know, how you have fallen, you know, O morning star. The ancients said that Venus was almost, it shone like the sun, you know. So whatever the case was, it put the moon to shame, you know, as far as a bright body. Now if you have, you know, two suns in the sunset, so to speak, I mean, that's. I think there's I wouldn't snuff out the possibility of that being the case, I guess. So yes, sir. Yes, 54 or 108.
Did you get into when the next projection?
Well, it stops at 701, really. Okay, so these are all, they tend to be multiples, and it. According to Patton, you've got Saturn and Jupiter coming into conjunction. So two heavier bodies. So it's like if you're pulling back the slingshot, you know, on Mars, you know, that's the time that it would happen. Where it's already in this irregular elliptical orbit. Mars does get closer and farther to us, not only based on the fact that we're going around the same circle, but also the fact that its orbit is just it's cockeyed. It's a little off. So as time goes on, it will establish more equilibrium with the sun. The same way you bop a top. If you've got a spinning top and you bop it, and the top wobbles, and then it straightens up again based on the gyroscopic. That's what Patton studied a lot of that. But 701 BC, nothing since from historical or biblical records. So.
Yeah, the answer to that is everything tends to conform to Kepler's law. So if we're cycling out and the work supports that particular orbit.
Yep.
That's why it changes. It's just constantly changing until it reaches that orbit.
Yep.
Our moon is progressing right now.
Yep. I guess one other comment on the Passover. You have to remember from an eclipse standpoint that between the Passover and the new moon and everything, you know, an eclipse can only happen. A solar eclipse can only happen when the moon is at new moon state. you know, because it's coming up closer to the sun, it's to the point where it's contrasted by the sun in the point of darkness. So that's the only time you really can have an eclipse. So yes, they do tie in the Hebrew calendar. And then the only time you can have an eclipse of the moon is the other way around. And the eclipses of the moon, you will actually see it red because of I think the light refracting around it and everything. But those are two key eclipse points. And yes, they are coming up in 2014, 2015. They also occurred on 1948, 1967. Significant years? I don't know, right? Israel and everything. 1492 also. So I've got that in the next batch of slides. If anyone else is interested in, I guess I'm interested in continuing on the presentation stuff. I guess maybe show of hands if you're interested in coming back or trying to extend this now. I don't want to upset the hamburger social schedule or whatnot. I'll incur a wrath if I. So Monday is a free day. Is anyone interested in having this on Monday for a free day activity? Okay. Enough people are, so I'm gonna put in a morning announcement on the Monday free day, which I guess that's tomorrow already, and pick up where we left off. I have to find a room, and shouldn't be too much of a problem. So you're welcome.